Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT. Now ADT professionally installs Google Nest products so your home is safe and smart. Google Nest cams can tell the difference between a person, an animal, and a vehicle. Mm. Or with Nest Doorbell, even a package. I can't tell the difference between those things. That's incredible. And with Nest Aware as part of your monthly ADT service, you get 30 days of event video history. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are trademarks of Google LLC.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Bayer. And I feel honestly thrilled about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
You know what? The fact that you had a weird inhuman pause and you said, honestly thrilled. And then there was a pause like, anyone buying it? Is anyone buying this?
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell. Shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I just looked up and read off a monitor that says the name of our podcast.
Yeah. Did you forget?
And I'm aware that I just said, hey, and welcome to, and I looked up and read it off the monitor.
We should put something up there
scary.
That we want read.
Like, yeah.
Welcome to Matt and Sona Get a Raise.
Yeah, it's like in Anchorman, where he'll read whatever.
He reads whatever. And what does he say? Fuck you, San Diego.
Oh, wait, no, I think it's go fuck yourself,
yeah,
San Diego.
Yeah, go fuck yourself,
I just
San
don't
Diego.
Want to misquote Anchorman.
Anyway, yeah. I don't know why I did that. I looked up. I know that this is called Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
You?
But I looked up and I do. Okay. I really do. Just don't take that monitor away. That's how relaxed I am. Mm. Let's look at it that way.
Yeah.
That's how relaxed and in the moment. And Sona, you'll attest, I'm not a relaxed person most of the time.
You're not. Why? Just stop.
What do you mean? Stop what?
Stop doing that.
Just chill.
Just relax.
If I could, I would.
Yeah.
You know that.
But you know, you've really worked on yourself a lot. You're a very different person than when I first started working for you. I will say that.
I've seen growth. What, 11 or 12 years ago?
13.
Wow.
It's 2009.
Okay, that's right.
That's right. Working for you.
And what was the difference? What was I like then?
I think you were wound up really tight. It was also when you were about to move to Los Angeles. There was a lot going on and you were very like, you know, I'm so nervous. I have no idea.
I don't think I walked around going, oh, I'm so nervous.
You weren't. But you could tell there was like just this weight on you. And you were like, you know, there was a lot going on. And now you seem a lot more.
I'm a lot happier than I was.
That's nice.
Yeah. We've been lucky that I think that the TBS show was so much fun to do.
Yeah.
And really kind of a joyous experience. And those were great people to work with. And then this thing has been just tripping and falling into, you know, what is it? I think my wife, she has a relative who, if something good happens to you, they say, well, you landed your ass in butter.
Oh,
which is like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you landed your ass in butter. But that's how it feels getting to do this podcast is it's.
You landed so your ass in butter.
I just want all the people listening to picture my bony, pale Irish ass.
Yeah.
That ain't getting any younger. Being dipped into sort of liquid, I'm going to say melting butter. It's very soft, mushy butter.
Like, is it opaque or is it kind of transparent, like movie theater popcorn?
It's sort of starting to get translucent around the edges.
Oh, God.
And it's also very hot. So as I'm being lowered into it, I start screaming because it's burning my ass.
That doesn't sound good.
Congratulations, you did this.
So I want to say, I really did.
That's not good.
With this podcast, I landed my ass in my bare ass in scalding hot butter.
You did it literally? You heard that expression and you just tried it literally.
Yeah, I did. I thought that must be great. So I had a winch put in the kitchen. And I had myself lowered.
What's a winch?
A winch. I had, you tell, it's like a pulley system.
Like on the front of a Jeep, if you want to pull a Jeep out of a mud, it's like a cable that will,
with a motor. Can unspool, has a motor. And so I had myself, I actually stole it off of a Jeep that I saw in a parking lot.
Yeah.
And I had it attached to the ceiling in my kitchen. And I had myself lowered and into this vat of butter.
The guy in the parking lot was like, "Where are you going with that winch?"
Said, "You're not
going
to dip your ass in butter, are you?" And I said, "I don't know. I wouldn't do that."
All right, Bruno the Splooge, out. Don't look at me like that. It was last week.
Oh, for God's sake. I'm very good at not mixing. Man.
I'm very good at mixing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I do feel.
Yeah, how dare you get on me about referencing something last week and you're just talking about putting your ass in butter. It's not like we're doing high art here.
No, I think this is high art.
No.
Oh, no. Yeah. No. No, it's not.
Anyway,
no, it's not.
I'll get us back on track, which is, and I'm sure there'll be some edits here.
It'd be really great if there weren't.
Feel
you got it.
That we were very fortunate. I was very fortunate to land this silly gig. It's really fun. And, you know, I'm enjoying myself. So I think I'm a happier chappy than I was 13 years ago.
Good.
Yeah.
And also, I don't see you like every day, Sona. You know what I mean? You've got your kids and stuff.
We see each other a lot.
It doesn't feel that way.
It doesn't?
No.
No, I think we do.
I used to see you constantly. I would see you all day long, and then if I was doing a show at night, you'd come on that. If I toured, you came on the tour.
Yeah.
You were omnipresent in my life all the time. Now it feels like, I see you when we do this, and I see you here and there.
That's true.
But you do seem happier, Sona.
I am so much happier. I don't know what happened for the last 11 months. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Come on. I kid.
To the end. We're friends forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get on with this. Yeah, it smells like ass butter in here.
Ass butter.
Jesus. I'm literally. Try it, folks. Dip your ass in very hot butter. Take it from me. It's the most sensual experience you'll ever have.
What if today's guest was like Malala or something?
And right now you just look out and you see that they're walking away. I've always wanted to have a really stupid segment up front and then look over and see through the window that the guest is gone. And I'd be like, wait a minute, who was it? It was, civil rights activist, like a really serious, good person doing good work. And they just heard me dipping my ass in butter. They're like, I'm going to go.
You've done it in the past when we've had like Hillary Clinton or, you know, Barack Obama. You're like, guys, we have to keep this intro very professional. And then it always devolves.
Yeah. Obama tried to leave. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
He tried to go and the door, he couldn't get the door open.
No, we don't remember because we weren't invited to that interview.
We weren't at that one.
Oh, right. The Secret Service looked into your backgrounds.
But they somehow approved ass butter guy.
Oh, trust me. Sona, you actually have a rap sheet, so
I don't.
Do not.
No, I don't. That's why I've gotten away with so much. It's because I don't, no one's ever.
Thief.
Yes, pick I pocket. Know. No, I'm not a pickpocket. That
Sticky
would be,
fingers.
That would be really cool if I knew that still.
You stole a scrunchie, right?
What?
Didn't you steal a scrunchie?
Oh, among a lot of others.
Yeah, Forever 20, you go to Forever 21 and steal stuff.
No, not, well, yeah, Forever
that's why you didn't get
once.
To meet Obama, because you are a thief.
I don't have a record. That's why I kept stealing.
Trust me, there's having a record, and then there's what the Secret Service can find out.
That's not true.
They knew exactly what you had done, and they knew that you could not be around the president.
They presented you with the scrunchie.
Urban Outfitters.
Yeah. Obama was like, where's the scrunchie thief? Scrunchie thief here? Where? The thief. This is the pickpocket. No, she couldn't be here. All right. Okay.
Jackie Mason.
Secret Service never. Oh, come on. That's Jackie Mason / Barack Obama. It's both if you want. My guest today. Hey, if you want impressions, this is not the place to tune in.
No. Okay.
My guest today. Oh, that was Obama. My guest today was a cast member on Saturday Night Live. Now co-created and what? What the hell? And now co-created.
You got too hung up on trying to pronounce Saturday
Night Live. My guest today was a cast member on Saturday Night Live and now co-created and stars in the new Showtime series. I love that for you. I'm thrilled she's with us today. Vanessa Bayer, welcome. It is a thrill to have you here. You know, I adore you. I think you're terrific. And we're going to start at the beginning.
Which
is you interned for me.
Yes.
And here's the crazy thing. There's this growing list all the time of people that intern for Conan I mean, we could start, but it's like Conan being me.
Yeah, okay.
It's like you have a little cult.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. Maybe I emit some sort of magical aura.
Oh, boy.
I don't think that's it.
That's not it.
That's probably not it. Okay, let's move on. But, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on.
It is very impressive.
John Krasinski, who, because he was a large, strong fellow, I would regularly, like, toss him around because when I see a, you know, I'm like a threatened male ape.
Right.
And Krasinski right away. And we've talked about it. I would like grab him and go, you listen to me. Yeah.
Mindy Kaling. Angela Kinsey.
Ellie Kemper.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's incredible.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Dick Cheney.
Incredible.
Yeah, Dick Cheney, right after he was done being vice president,
became an intern.
And you know what? He was a terrific intern. And he loves comedy.
That's always what you think. You hope.
He was great. Did you have a good time? How long did you intern for us?
I interned for the summer. I was probably there for 2 months. Mm-hmm. I was a general production intern. So we sat on those couches outside of Tanya's desk. Tanya had her desk, and then we sat on those couches, and we sort of waited for stuff to do.
Right.
But then
it was like, so you were, I remember those interns, those were the interns that sat there, and they were like firemen, because they were inert, and then someone would quickly say, Conan needs hair gel. And you'd be activated and you'd go rushing off to buy that special hair gel that I like.
It was so fun. It was also, sorry to brag about this, but the summer before I had interned at Chelsea Market at Oxygen. Mm-hmm. Okay. And
name dropper.
Yeah, whatever. It's not even a big deal. But I, because I had interned there, I knew where to get all the free samples and stuff. Uh-huh. And so then I got asked, like, once a week they'd have an intern go get like oranges and stuff from Chelsea Market, like citrus to bring back to the office.
Right. And that was because I was obsessed with no one on my staff getting rickets, the disease people get when they don't get enough vitamins.
Because you did your show Crossing the Ocean in an old pirate ship.
Well, I just knew that there's one thing. I said, I don't know if my show's going to be funny or not, but no one's getting rickets on my watch.
Yeah.
This ancient mariner's disease. So you would go out to get oranges.
So they'd be like, oh, who wants to go to Chelsea Market? And I'd be like, I do. So I'd go get oranges.
I do.
And I just spend, you know, an hour getting all the samples, eating all the samples at Chelsea Market, and bring back oranges, and that's a real great memory.
Well, can I just say, it sounds like, I'm going to say right now, it sounds like you were a bad intern. Because you spent as much time, your simple task was to grab some oranges, and then you,
you
what, consumed or tried on 75 different free samples before you returned?
Right. Well, I mean, I wasn't being paid.
Fair point.
Oh, boy. But
Why
do people expect payment for their labor? I don't understand. Why?
You got school credit.
But nobody, I got school credit. So it was like a class. What a cheap class.
Who has gotten into like a reputable law school because they worked for Conan?
Yeah. I'm doing this job for school credit.
I know. You'll get there. Oh. Just a few more years and you'll get there. No, of course, I mean, there's so much to talk about. But what is the gap between when you're an intern on my show and when you start? I think you started Saturday Night Live in 2010.
Yes. So I interned for you the summer of 2003. So 7 years. So actually, the summer before my senior year of college is when I interned for you. And then I moved to Chicago after college and I was there for 6 years. And then I got, so pretty quick.
What were you doing to get you to SNL?
I did, you know, I moved to Chicago and I did all the improv. Yeah. Like I did improv everywhere. And then I, not improv everywhere, that's a separate, improv, you know what improv everywhere is?
I don't, actually.
It's the thing where like, there'll be, I don't know if it still exists, but like,
I hope not.
It was big when I interned, actually. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like on a subway train and all of a sudden they start like all singing the same song.
Oh.
Oh, God.
And then like, and then people on the train are supposed to be amused, but they're actually like, we just want to get to where we're going. Oh.
It's a war crime.
Oh my God, it Matt.
It's like early flash mob, basically.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they'd like just start doing like scenes. It's bad.
No, and you know what goes online every now and then? You'll see it'll go viral as someone, a movie theater projector will break down, and then someone will jump up in front of the crowd and start doing stand-up. And the universal response is revulsion and anger.
You said that like it happens a lot. I feel like it only happened one time, and it was a very awkward thing, right?
It started... I'm predicting that it's going to be a major thing. Okay. I'm predicting... I know that there was one case where it happened, but I'm predicting that this is going to spread very quickly.
People are breaking...
Yeah, that was... To me, that was the first germ that escaped from, like, the Wuhan lab.
No.
And that's... And now it's just... You know, it's going to spread. And soon there's going to be improv everywhere,
yeah,
all the time. And Fauci's going to be on the air saying, don't say yes and whatever you do.
Say no but.
Say no but. Or just no period. Did you now? So you, and then you did Second City.
I did Second City and The Annoyance and I.O. So those three.
And Andy Richter came from The Annoyance Theater.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
It's really interesting. I have this fascinating relationship with improv, which is I started doing improv.
Yeah.
And I always thought improv's a great tool. And I always got worried the minute people were being charged to see it.
That was always, I remember, a thing when I did it in Chicago. And like, I would have friends come to a show, especially like early on. And I, you know, you just don't know if the show is going to be good or not, because someone could get in there. And I, as an audience member, I saw so many hours and hours and hours of improv, probably hundreds of bad hours of improv, because you have to be kind of bad at it before you get good at it. Like, I think very few people.
Which is true of so many things.
Yes. Yeah, but it's like you just, yeah, you just, I remember my parents coming to shows and just being like, what are you doing?
Oh, no.
I remember we did a show once where, like, I was with this group and it was, like, one rule of, like, Earth, like, doesn't exist. So it would be,
right,
like, and
right,
it would be, like, you know, I don't know if it was, like, gravity. Or it was, like, something like that. And it would be, like, do the whole improv show with this one. And you don't tell the audience what it is. But this one thing that is, like, a rule of living is not a rule. And it was, like, that's how I felt. I was, like, I guess we're just going to like run the world after this. Like it was just like, we've come up with like the most incredible improv theory, like people's mind. And people were like, that's okay. Like it's fine. Like good show, I guess. But
good nothing. My favorite comment is good show, I guess.
Yeah. But it's like the thing where like you're doing improv. You're like, we've come up with it. Like this is it.
Yo, no, we cracked the code.
Yeah.
That is and I think that's something that's, you have to be in your 20s.
Yeah.
And an incredible comedy nerd and very, and it's, there's a sweetness to it.
So sweet.
But you really think we have found something that Monty Python never thought of.
Yeah.
We found something that, you know, the great, the Marx Brothers never thought of. We thought of something that no one's ever. But I will say in, in defense of, you know, when you see good improv, it's thrilling.
It is.
And
it is.
I remembered when Upright Citizens Brigade, when I first saw them in New York, we were so lucky because on our late night show, we basically had the entire cast and, you know, everybody who was involved in the original Upright Citizens Brigade. That was our group of players,
yeah,
on the show.
Yeah.
And I look back at it now and I think, well, that was just insane good luck.
Yeah, well,
that we can just, we need someone to play Andy Richter's sister who's obsessed with me. Amy Poehler will do it. She'll take a script that's a B or a B plus and make it an A plus plus every single time through,
yeah,
sheer force of will and talent. And it was such a joy. And then one day Amy said, hey, come on down and do be a guest on the ASCAT show for Upright Citizens Brigade. And I said, well, sure, I'd be happy to do that. And then I remember I'd been on, you know, a TV host for a long time at that point. The terror came back to
me, yeah,
of you're completely naked.
Yeah.
Which was my first mistake. No one wanted to see me naked.
Oh.
I was actually naked.
No, that's a...
That was my idea.
I thought you meant figuratively, but...
No, no. That's what they meant was, yeah, you'll be naked on stage. And so I removed all my clothing.
Oh,
and
no.
Apparently not a good body, I'm told. No.
A good body, I guess.
You don't have... you, yeah. No, I got up there and you have to go out and take suggestions from the crowd and then tell a story. It worked. And I was so relieved and I went backstage and the show was over and I felt like I have just driven my motorcycle through the comedy ring of fire, you know? And I'll never forget, Amy Poehler said, yeah, and I think the second show will be even better. And I had no idea that they did two shows. And I thought she was kidding. And I went, yeah, can you imagine if there was a second show? And she said, dude, there's a second show.
Oh my God.
And I was like, no, I can't, there's no way I can do that again. She said, well, you're doing it again. And there were two shows.
Yeah.
And so for the second one, I took my clothes off.
Okay. Got it.
You always want to end on a nude cover.
Yeah. No, it is scary, especially once people know who you... I remember doing it once or twice after getting on SNL, and mm-hmm. I was so scared. And I was, what am I doing? Like, I don't know how to do this anymore. And like, I don't know. My stories suck.
Well, also because the stakes have been raised because now it's Vanessa.
It's, yeah, you know, yeah.
Like you're on SNL and you've got all these hit characters and you feel that the bar is higher, whether the audience feels that or not.
Yeah.
That's how you feel, like, oh, now I've got it. Whatever I did before when I was anonymous has to
yeah.
be, it has to be five times better now.
Yeah, yeah. Scary.
You had incredible success at SNL. What's interesting, and I know you've, this has got to be a powerful theme for you, but I want to just go back to your childhood because it's so defining. When you were ill, you were seriously, seriously ill.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd think that I believe you had leukemia,
yes,
a form of leukemia.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd think that that would not fuel comedy.
Right, right.
But even at the time that you were sick as a child,
yeah,
your family tried to find humor in it. Is that right?
Yes. We would joke about it all the time, and we would particularly joke about all the like perks we got from it, and we would like use it.
For, like what perks?
Well,
wow, free chemo! Try and get that at a party.
Jesus.
Well, there's
Christ.
That.
Well, I know. Concept. I'm sorry.
No. I. It's just like whenever you go through a difficult time,
yep.
people are so nice to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So maybe I'm messed up that I focus on that. But like I, you know, like I was in high school and I could like come into school late all the time. Like I just came into school whenever I wanted. We had such a strict attendance woman. And a lot of times it was because, you know, I wanted to sleep in, especially like when, you know, later on in my treatment when things were like, you know, I was starting to feel better and stuff. I just could like come in whenever I wanted. I didn't have to do gym class.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's it. That is.
You guys are reacting
sweet.
As
I thought. No, but I.
That one hit me.
No.
The core.
Trust me.
That's
you were talking to three people who are very happy to miss gym.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what is more humiliating in high school than gym class? And you have to change into the outfit, and it's so.
And they want you to climb up a rope,
yeah.
and your arms don't work. Yeah. This is what I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't climb up that rope.
Yeah. I just was like, I don't want to start doing this. And they were like, okay. what else? I didn't have to. Someone asked me to homecoming, and I said, "Well, I have chemo that weekend."
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Was this someone you didn't want to go?
It was someone I didn't want to go with.
Okay.
And then I actually ended up going with someone else. But I said,
"Oh my God!"
Well, I said,
my
"Look,
God.
I said
how did
they,
that person
they
feel?
Said, I said they changed.
I can't make it.
I said they
chemo.
Changed the weekend of my chemo."
But I'm still
Look,
not going with you.
It doesn't make you a yeah. good person. Having cancer doesn't make you a good person.
But if we can get one moral out of today's episode, then yeah.
Wait,
okay.
So there's no upside to cancer then is what I'm hearing?
No, it sounds like.
Yeah, look, but I like to think I mostly didn't use it for stuff like that. But either way.
Nothing brings the family together like a large two-topping pizza. It's the perfect way to celebrate any occasion. This happens all the time at my house.
Yeah.
I say, kids, let's get together. Your father wants to tell you stories of his childhood. Nobody comes running, all right? But guess what? When I get one of those two large two-topping pizzas at Domino's, suddenly everybody wants to hear from Daddy. At Domino's, you can carry out large two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 for this week only. No limit on number of pizzas. You know, what toppings do you like? I like pepperoni.
I like pepperoni. I like olive. I like bell pepper. I like mushrooms. I know you don't like mushrooms. I like mushrooms.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to out me as a no mushroom guy, but okay. Domino's Pizza. That's the way to get the whole family together. And this is a great deal. Visit Domino's.com or use the app to order your large two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary. Sona, what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together and then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere, endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy mini games. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money, or you can go after their fortune changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. If you're being honest, no one really knows what you do for work, especially if you're in B2B. That's a business doing business with other businesses.
Oh, I didn't know you knew what that was.
I know exactly what that is. B2B, I use that all the time. Businesses doing businesses with other businesses. Fortunately, LinkedIn has a network of professionals who get what you do, and you can reach the right people who matter most to your company. LinkedIn has over 1 billion members on its platform, including 70 million decision makers.
That's good.
Since LinkedIn members are regularly updating their work history, you can precisely build a target audience by job title, industry, company, and more. Start reaching the right people for your, get ready, B2B business with LinkedIn ads. Gets even better because LinkedIn will give you a $100 credit on your next campaign.
That's crazy.
Yeah, just go to linkedin.com/Team Coco to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/Team Coco. Terms and conditions apply. I get to say this again. Listen, LinkedIn, the place to be, right?
That's cool.
Business to business.
That's really cool.
Also, always really liked attention,
and it's
a great way to get it. It's like when you're a kid and you see like someone come on the bus and they have a broken leg, and you're like, "Well, it must be nice to be them." You know, like everyone's going to sign their cast now.
Okay, I can exactly relate to what you're talking about because when I was in the fourth grade, I remember it was right near my brother's birthday. I went to school and we had gym class and that day was wrestling. And as a joke, someone came running up and jumped on me and I fell backwards and put my arm back and it bent the wrong way.
Whoa.
And I really broke my elbow badly. They were like, "Well, you're going to the nurse." And I go to the nurse and my arm won't work and I know something's wrong. And they call my mom and my mom comes rushing to school. I'm like, "My mom is coming to school."
She loves me?
Yeah, she loves me. And I can remember the nurse on the phone saying, "It's Conan." No, he's, no, that's Neil you're thinking of. No, it's not Justin. No, Kate is a girl. No, it's not Jane either. No, it's okay. And she was like, got it. But she came, they take me to the hospital. They gave me a drug that made me super high. I remember like, I don't know what this is, but this is something. I suddenly have no inhibitions. And then they put me in a big cast. My mom took me home. They put me like on a couch in like the center of the house. And I remembered all my brothers and sisters coming home and coming up to me to see how I was and everybody talking about me. And I was told, "You don't have to go to school. It's almost Christmas vacation anyway. So you're going to have multiple weeks off from school." And then I remembered my mom, because it was before Christmas, she went and got one of the toys that, quote, Santa was going to give me and gave it to me ahead of time.
Oh.
And I was sitting there thinking, this is fucking awesome.
That is great.
Yeah.
That is great.
And then walking around with a big cast and a girl I had a crush on being like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know. I may lose the arm."
You know, obviously that was like, I feel like sort of focusing on that stuff helped me get through that time. But we really had fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you do that and then I think for a while you thought, "Well, I'm going to study biology."
Yes. I was
that because you had been ill?
Well, kind of. I mean, I didn't really necessarily want to be a doctor, but I really liked biology in high school, and so I went into college thinking I'll be a bio major. Mm-hmm. But then I took this really hard biology class, and it was all to like weed out the pre-meds. Like they wanted to like get rid of any pre-meds.
to weed out the improvisers. Yeah.
That's probably more like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I immediately was like, okay, I'll be a communications major.
That's one of, you know, I've met so many people. I mean, honestly, one of the best writers I've ever met is Robert Smigel, brilliant writer who I met at Saturday Night Live when I was working there. And he had been pre-med to go into dentistry.
Wow.
And then when he graduated, like I think Cornell had to said to his dad, can I just do like a couple of months of improv before I become a dentist? And his father was like, all right, but as long as you become a dentist. But I mean, it's amazing how many people jump ship.
Yeah, it was like you had to do sort of like a serious college major and to like get ready for a career. And for me, I started doing a sketch group in college. So, you know, when I interned for you, I was part of Bloomer's all-female sketch comedy and musical parody troupe.
I remember you telling me that on the elevator once, and I said, you will never be a success, remember? Yeah. I said, I have to tell you right now, I know talent, and you will never, ever make it. Remember that day?
Why would you bring that up?
And you started crying, and I said, no, I'm just being honest. I know it with great certainty. I've told Krasinski. I've told...
Cheney.
Take it from me. None of you will ever make it. I know this for a fact, but I haven't heard you talk about it, that you... it's my ultimate nightmare.
Oh, God.
When you were with Second City, you did improv on a cruise ship.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I have to hear about that because people should know who are listening. There's nothing more perilous than being the comedian or the, quote, funny person on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't go well, there's nowhere to go and hide.
Right.
And I know for a fact, Mike Sweeney, my head writer for years and years and years and years, said he did stand up on a cruise once. And he did his set and it didn't go well. And he stayed in his cabin the rest of the time.
Oh, wow.
Because you're trapped with the audience that didn't enjoy your show.
Yeah.
And he once told me a story about a comedian who did so badly on a cruise ship. He wasn't there for this, but it's kind of a story in the comedy. It was a stand up. He did so badly and the crowd got the people got so mad that they helivacked him off the cruise.
What? Oh, my God.
A helicopter came and took him away.
Oh. No.
Because he had like insulted the crowd and people were really mad and looking for him and they're like, we just got to get him out of here.
Oh, wow.
I just love the cut from a guy angering a crowd to a helicopter.
And that's my time.
And I never picture him in the helicopter. I always picture him holding on to a cable and being like, that's my time. Be good to your waitress. So tell me about that.
Yeah,
I'm just
curious. I think that in the history of Second City's collaboration with Norwegian Cruise Lines, I was on the best run. Basically, we did these 1 week cruises and we didn't perform, and they left on Sunday and we didn't perform until Thursday night.
Whoa.
So for like most of the week, nobody knew who we were, and we were just going to the islands, eating the food, which was not great, but it was free, and just sort of like hanging out. And then Thursday night we would do this sketch show that we used to do. They had us do two the first week, like two in a row, two of these like, I don't know, hour-long shows. And then they decided that we'd get a better audience if we only did one. So they cut our work that night in half. Mm-hmm. The audience didn't love the show, but it was like, it was a mix of like improv and sketches. And I remember I had this one sketch that I thought where I got to, I think I played Emily Bronte and I was like doing this like monologue and the audience, you know, it wasn't for them. Mm-hmm. So that
Emily was not their favorite Bronte sister.
Yeah.
They were big Charlotte.
They were like, what about Charlotte?
For this really broad audience, I'm doing this like really specific thing and I'm trying to get them. It's like, and they were just like, what the fuck? Not interested. So then I ended. So my so I just did like the, an improv game. We did like it was like the audience was sort of watching it, kind of like I think they enjoyed some of it, but they mostly were sort of puzzled and kind of like, well, this is different, you know, like because the other shows that would happen on the other nights were this big dancing, like sort of like Broadway style group that would sure. dance and sing and put on these huge productions with these huge costumes and sets. And we had like four chairs and we would just be like, hello, we are from Second City, Chicago. And people were like, I don't, okay.
Yeah. Were they costumes? Where's the music?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the people kicking in unison?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're like, and I'm going to play a Bronte. Oh, good. I hope it's my favorite Bronte. Yeah. I hope it's Charlotte Bronte.
Uh-oh. We got on the wrong cruise.
So yeah, we'd do that. And then the next night we'd do an improv show that was, and then the next night we'd do another improv show and that was it.
You know, one of the things that always impressed me about you is it always occurred to me you're very prolific. You got on SNL and your characters are unlike each other, you know? You were able to come up with these varied characters and I didn't see the connection between them. I thought that was really impressive. Do you know what I mean?
That's like, so nice.
Well, it's true. You know, I the bar mitzvah boy and then the woman doing the weather, what is it? Dawn Lazarus.
Right.
I don't see, you were coming up with people who I thought just existed so far apart from each other, which I thought was very impressive.
That's so nice. I was really lucky because they really let me try a lot of that stuff. And sometimes it worked and,
Was Jacob your favorite character?
Yes, I think so.
I don't know about you guys, but just the sweetness of it.
Yeah.
It's so sweet. And the comedy was really good. And I've been to many a bar mitzvah, many a bat mitzvah. I'm going to a bat mitzvah this weekend.
Aww.
You know, it always fascinated me as a coming from such a strong Catholic family as a kid,
right,
when I would
right.
go to a bar mitzvah and I went to a lot of them, I was trying to figure out why am I so comfortable with this religion? And it just felt somehow less judgmental to me. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because it's like, I think I had bat mitzvahs every weekend in seventh grade that mm-hmm. I would go to. It was just expected, you know, you're just asking these 13-year-olds to be in this really formal setting, and especially for the boys who were like so much less far along in their development than the girls, they just didn't know how to do it. And it was sort of like accepted, but they don't know where to put their hands. They don't know how to like gesture. Like there's nothing about them they've figured out nothing.
No, they're not. It's the day that they're becoming a man, but it's so clear that no, that's
that's not for
I mean,
years.
First of all, I didn't become a man, I don't think, till I was like 36. So the idea that if someone had said, today, Conan, you're 13, it's the day you're a man, everyone would have just lost it laughing.
Yeah. And that's so it's like there it just was so funny. And I don't think I realized at the time how funny it was. But I think I really was observing like these boys just being fully out of their element. And then people who've seen me do the bar mitzvah boy, who know my brother, like even who didn't know my brother as a kid, are like, you're doing an impression of Jonah, like you're mm-hmm. doing. So apparently he's still like that. But there's just like a real universal.
Does he still wear a yarmulke with like the Yankees logo on it?
He that was something we added in.
But I also loved the in the Catholic Church when we had like a confirmation or anything, there was no room to be funny. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It was so serious. First communion, confirmation, it was so deadly serious, and there's incense and Christ died for you. So shut up. And what I always really stunned me in a good way about when I would see go to a bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah is the joking around.
That's so funny because that was always really fun. Like we would always think like Jacob's dad probably helped him write a joke like to deliver like, you know.
And the joke can't be that good.
No, but to them it's pretty. It's like that is such a true thing, Conan, like of like, you know, when you hear like a rabbi tell a joke, you're like, okay, this is the best rabbi in the world. Like it's just so fun to like be in that kind of like serious setting. But everyone's just like, I gotta think of a good joke.
We're all in situations where somebody gets up and they're like a corporate CEO or their job is delivering serious news and then they make a little joke and everyone's like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so much funnier than anything a comedian has ever said. And you're sitting there thinking, not really.
Yeah.
That's why as a comedian, you should consider giving a sermon.
I know. I think I'm in the wrong business. I would be so much funnier if I was known as like a spot welder, you know? Now the spot welder is going to make a joke and suddenly people would really appreciate me. But I think that's something that I have noticed is that if the rabbi makes a joke, everyone's so delighted. And the rabbi knows it too. The rabbi knows all I have to do is just wiggle my little finger and I'm getting a big laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then they can kind of – it's going to be hard for me to explain this, but they'll make the joke and then they'll like kind of enjoy it and then they'll go back to like – you know, when they go back to being serious.
Yes,
I'm not doing a good job of it.
No. Yeah.
But then they go like right back into like, but let's think. Okay. You know, like, who are...
No, let's just serious. But let's be serious here. What sacred rite are we entering today?
And yeah.
What does it mean? And so suddenly they have total power over, I can make you laugh and then I can immediately yank the leash and say, you understand. And especially in Catholicism, you know, you can... whatever. If a priest does make a joke, he can immediately say, he died for you and you laugh. You're going to hell.
Thinking about it is really funny of going like, and that's the lesson we all get. Is it as good as a bowl of pasta?
You know, the other thing that you did this run of these commercials that just kept deteriorating. Is it Tortoni? What was it?
For Totino's.
Yeah.
Pizza rolls.
Oh, my God. Oh. And what I always loved about that is I think if one of the great advances that SNL made from when I was there, as I think the pre-recorded pieces got more and more sophisticated, the fact that you know, you're the mom who's just coming in saying, it's the treat that everybody wants and I've just made it in the microwave. You know, Tortoni's time, whatever. And here it is. And then that it just got darker.
So dark.
And darker and darker and took all these insane turns.
Yeah, yeah. We got really lucky with those. I mean, the first year I wanted to do something about like Super Bowl commercials and how there's always like a woman who's like feeding, you know, the hungry guys.
Nine guys are going, yeah. And then the woman comes in with some treat.
Exactly. Exactly. And Chris Kelly and Sarah Schneider worked on it with me. We like all worked on it together. And then they kept like every year they'd be like, we should do another one. Like we should do another Totino's. And they just every year got darker and darker and darker somehow. But I also was really lucky when I was at SNL because I think, I don't know if it's because when I was in Chicago, I auditioned for commercials so much because commercials were so big in Chicago.
Right.
Like it was like the only way you could sort of get paid to be on TV in Chicago that I was just really lucky. I got to do so many commercials and I loved always playing that woman who is like, you know, like in the last one, she gets asked her name and she doesn't have one. Like she's just like a lady who's kind of like there to serve.
Well, I love the reveal at one point. It gets so dark that, and I think this was Larry David, but everybody's like, all the guys are always going like, yeah, yeah, on the screen. And then you walk around and there's nothing on the screen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We see that you're, I mean, it was very Twilight Zone, but there's a whole different kind of tone. I just love that the show opened itself up to all these different textures.
Yeah, it was so fun doing those. And I appreciate, I mean, it's like the longer I was there, they kind of let me do stuff that was sort of weird. Like, you know, it's hard to kind of get that stuff on. But then they like slowly, like, I don't know. It was really fun.
I think that show's doing something right and will probably last. Probably make it. I said on year 78. I want to talk about your show. I love that for you, which I really like a lot.
That's
and
so nice.
It is, and I want to tell people, encourage people to watch this show because it's personal. It does feel like it's coming from your personal story.
Yeah.
Because you're character was ill as a child.
Yes.
A big part of the show is when you're a child and you're ill, you fall in love with home shopping shows.
Yes.
is that true to you?
Yes. I mean, when I was, even before I was sick is when I watched the most home shopping. I mean, when I was.
So maybe they made you sick.
So maybe. They,
I'm just saying.
Jesus.
There could be a link.
Come on.
I'd like to get that out there.
I hope that's the headline.
If you see jewelry, if you see cheap jewelry from too many angles in close up, it weakens the immune system. It's possible.
Well, look.
No, your character, that is yeah. borrowed from your childhood.
Yes, I loved home shopping when I was little, and I would like tape it. Like I everything about it seems so glamorous to me. I love the way that the women would like the hosts like would tell the stories about the products, and they'd be like, "You can wear this to a brunch with friends. You can wear this, you know, to your goddaughter's christening or whatever." And I'd be like, I don't have a goddaughter at this. But like, it's like she'll have a christening someday, and you know, it's like I just was like it, the idea of like being a woman who had all these things to wear this jewelry to or whatever it was was so fun for me to like, you know, and like I loved it. I loved how they like touched all the products and how they just sort of like it was so mesmerizing. And I think that's a lot of people like, you know, in the same way people keep like sports on all the time on mm-hmm. their TV. I think a lot of people do that with home shopping because it's so soothing and so kind of it's such a kind of escape in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And so I just like loved it as a kid. And it wasn't like I was necessarily escaping anything, but I just loved watching it. It was like, it's so, it is in retrospect sort of odd that like other kids were probably watching like cartoons. Like, whenever Saved by the
Bell. They're all talking about Saved by the Bell or a cartoon. And you were saying, oh my God, that cubic zirconian necklace. 1999.
Yeah, I'm like, this is such a steal, and it's so versatile, and I can wear it. You know, I can wear it in the cafeteria, and then I can wear it after school when I'm going.
And your goddaughter, I will give this to my goddaughter one day.
Yeah.
And then she'll take it to a jeweler, and he'll say, "This is shit."
This is also something that I would always, when we were writing, some of the writers who are like less familiar with home shopping would be like, "Yeah, like the," and we had such incredible writers, but like they'd be like, "Like, yeah, like this, like the, like, let's talk about like they're selling this shitty necklace or something." And I'd always be like, "I just got to tell you, the stuff they sell is actually really nice."
Well, that's it. Okay. But Vanessa, you bring up a really good point, which is one of the things I really like about the show. And by the way, your cast is great. And you have Molly Shannon.
Isn't that incredible?
Who's one of my favorite people of all time. She's so good in your show. But the point that I wanted to make was that I like that your character's enthusiasm for home shopping and the home shopping network and home shopping shows is genuine and real. And as long as you play it that way, you actually start to agree. Like that was my experience watching it is you're not winking and making fun of this.
Right, yeah.
And if you both play that reality as the viewer, I have respect for it.
Yeah, that's so nice.
But I mean, I think if you had been snarky about it, it wouldn't work.
I think I really appreciate that. That's something we really, from like day one, my co-creator Jeremy Byler and I were like, we can't make fun of it. Because it's, first of all, I really do love it. Like, I think it's, you know, incredible. But it's also, it's just like, just kind of what assholes we would be if we were just like up there kind of being like, you know, like, look at this dumb world. You know, like we really wanted to have respect for the world. And it is like an incredible, it's like this huge business of live TV. It's like this whole world. And I guess now I'm just rambling, but yes, thank you.
Did you see the rambling light go off?
Yeah, it's just right
there. It's right. I shouldn't have that behind me staring at you.
Well, look.
I just hit this button. Rambling.
Specifically.
With Jeff Goldblum, I'm just constantly pounding it. Rambling. No, I think that you've made like a really nice world with this show. And I can tell this was it comes from your personal story to a degree, and then you've found all this great stuff with it.
Which
is really nice.
It's been really fun because the whole world of home shopping is such a great world to have comedy in, because it's like these hosts have to talk for such a long time, you know, and they inevitably start talking about their lives and stuff, because it's like that's, you know, and that also makes it relatable and the product's relatable. Sure. It makes people think like the hosts are their friends, you know, right. And stuff. So it's like it's such a fun world to like, just play around and people pass around like bloopers from home shopping and stuff. And that's like a big thing. But I think just the regular home shopping is so entertaining because it's just hearing these hosts talk about their lives and, you know, tell these stories about the products and stuff. It's like so mesmerizing. It's so fun to watch.
And so you still watch today? You still watch?
Yeah. I mean, especially I got more into it when we were, I kind of got back into it when we were watching, when we were writing the show.
Do you have a working knowledge of their bios now? Have you pieced everything together where it just feels like you know kind
well,
of personally?
There's two hosts that I used to watch as a kid, Jane Tracy and Mary Beth Roe. And
I wish you had said, say it with me.
And Jeremy and I took a tour of QVC when we first started working on the on this show, and we got to meet them. Like we got to spend an hour talking to them. It felt like it was like 10 minutes because they still work there. They're still like the most like kind of
iconic
hosts there. And they are like, they're just incredible to talk to, you know, like it's just like, so getting to meet them, even like after 7 years on SNL, where I got to meet like a different, you know, celebrity host and musical guest every week, I was like, okay, this is, you know, this is the big time.
This is, yeah.
I was like so starstruck.
Well, I've worked, yeah.
Yeah.
I've worked with the biggest stars in film and music, but now we're getting serious.
Yeah.
How many have you made? I love that for you.
We've made 8. Mm-hmm. There will be 8 in this season. Mm-hmm. And when I say we've made 8, does that mean, you know, 8 are done? You know, like, we're still editing.
You need to not lie to me.
Yeah.
Are they done completely post-production, edited, sound?
Yeah. That's,
everything's been balanced?
That's what you need to know.
Okay. Well, yeah. No. Listen. Then you didn't make 8.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Now I'm snapping at you again. I'm sorry.
Gotcha, journalism. Jeez.
Well, we've exposed you, Vanessa, for the fraud that you are.
Yeah.
You made 8.
Yeah, but
the sound mixing,
done?
Is the sound mixing really done?
Yeah, well, I'm going into sound mix today, so I guess the answer is no.
Well, I really like the show so much, and I hope you keep making more and more of them.
Thank you so much.
It's terrific. I love that for you. It's really good. How do people watch it?
So, okay, you can stream it wherever you stream Showtime, starting on Fridays, like any old Friday. It's out now.
But are there some Fridays where it's forbidden to stream?
So the episodes are on Showtime.
Are there some Fridays where if you try and stream it, you'll be arrested?
You can. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Don't do it on that
certain
Friday.
Fridays. So new episodes come out every Friday on Showtime, wherever you stream Showtime. But then they also come out on actual Showtime channel.
Yeah.
Is that what we call it? On Sunday night at 8:30.
You're asking me? I'm 95 years old.
And I think by the time you hear this, most of them will be out.
Yes.
Yeah. By the time you hear this,
just go ahead and
they'll
stream.
They'll be out. Yeah. But please watch this show. I love that for you because it's so well done and you always make me laugh. And then sometimes people, especially, you know, after an experience like SNL, they can have a hard time figuring out how do I channel myself in this next project? And you found it, which is so great.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done it without my internship. Let's all be honest.
Well, thank you that we brought it back to, again, all comedy does come from me eventually.
Oh, boy.
And has, because I travel through time. Oh. So I gave Steve Martin his start and Charlie Chaplin his start. I'm dangerously mentally ill. Yeah. I think we've established that.
I think the divine comedy comes from
my... My favorite thing, I've said this before and I'll say it again, my favorite thing about this podcast form that I love, I get to sit with you and really have the conversation I've wanted to have. So this is really nice.
That's so nice.
This is what my people call a mitzvah for me.
Yes. Thank you. I don't know what that means.
it's an old Irish term.
Yeah, right.
It's an old Irish term.
Okay.
It means a really good potato.
Okay. Oh, love
like
that.
A really good large potato.
Yes.
That goes well with a Guinness. But Vanessa, thank you so much for being
here.
This has been a big treat for
us. This has been so fun. Thanks so much.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
can't believe we've been doing this podcast for 5 years. Lots changed. But you know what? There's also things that haven't changed. Mm. Great taste of Miller Lite. Yeah. Hasn't changed. It was the original light beer. And to this day, for my money, it's still the best one.
It's good.
I'll fight anyone that disagrees.
Will you?
Well, not with my... I'll have someone fight for me. Miller Lite has more of the taste you want, less of the stuff you don't.
Yeah.
I like great taste, clean finish, simple ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, some of these beers, they put caramel in there.
Ugh.
Corn cobs.
Oh.
Chicory. I don't want that. I like the simple taste of Miller Lite. Classic. Undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories.
That's good.
It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need, holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes, hello, like beer.
Yeah, not like water that's just kind of beery.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like that. That's a bad name for a beer, too. Water that's mostly beery. The original light beer since 1975. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. I came up with that.
Oh.
I should get paid. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Conan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all have a social battery, and you can feel drained sometimes, you know? What I'm saying is, you know me, and sometimes I'm bursting with energy, and sometimes I get a little down. Well, you got to pay attention to your social battery and spread yourself a little more evenly, okay? Don't get spread too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, it's flexible, and it's suited to your schedule. So all you do, and it makes it easy, fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. And that's important. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Conan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. That's right. I'm going to spell help. HELP.com/Conan.
I'm going to let our listeners in behind the scenes here for just a moment. We've just experienced real technical difficulties.
Yeah, we have.
We were supposed to be joined by Matt Gourley, who has a babysitter emergency.
Yeah.
This is the babysitter that looks after him, apparently, not his child. And Matt couldn't be on this Zoom. He was going to be on a Zoom, but there's a technical difficulty.
Yeah.
During this technical difficulty, while we're waiting for Matt, we're sitting here and we're waiting. And you take a phone call from your mom.
Yes.
And suddenly, I'm no longer in the United States.
Okay.
No, I'm now. Listen, I'm. You know how tolerant I am of other cultures and how much I love the Armenian
people.
Do
I? Oh, okay.
But listen. You started talking in Armenian.
Yes.
Could you give us just a sample of the kinds of things you were saying? Because I was sitting here. I'm very proud of my people. Died to come to this country, you know?
Okay.
It was an arduous journey, and they fought hard to carve out a spot here in the United States.
Right, okay.
And so I thought I was here in the U.S. when suddenly I was transported to Armenia.
Well, the United States is a big melting pot. There are a lot of immigrants here who speak different languages.
Mm-hmm. And I love that about this country.
Yes.
I really do.
You do sometimes say, what is that, mishmish? Or...
No. That's insensitive. I would never say that.
Yeah, okay.
But tell me what you were saying, because it's fascinating to me. I'm sitting here and I know you as Sona, and suddenly,
yeah.
Well, tell us what you were saying.
So my mom called,
mm-hmm.
and we are, you know, feeding the boys now is like a process because they're eating more solids and, mm-hmm. you know, not as much milk. And so my mom doesn't fully know yet how to do that and
right.
handle it. So she called me and she was just like, inchinem sona, you know, inchtam hima. And I'm like, mama bargetsav, and you know, is...
Now, what are you saying here? What is being
she's
said?
She's like, I don't know what to do right now. I'm like, did he sleep? And you know, gati chametz, you know, did he drink milk? Like, but I think that when... My mom calls and I start speaking to her in Armenian, you always do this bit where you're like, what was that?
Well, it's very, like, it's very arresting. It's very shocking.
I'm just not used to it.
Yeah.
Now, we're here in our new podcast studios, and I own this building and I own this podcast studio.
Okay.
And I think of this, tell me if I'm wrong, as sovereign U.S. soil, you know?
Okay.
And
okay.
Am I allowed to forbid you
no.
from speaking a foreign language no. in this building?
No. You're absolutely, that's 100% not okay. To okay. say that someone can't speak a foreign language.
Well,
in this
I feel
building.
This is like, you know, the way an embassy is sacred soil.
You can speak different languages in embassies. What, there's nowhere where this is okay that you're talking. This,
I like, feel like this is all I've ever wanted is my own clubhouse. And now I finally, you know, we've always, you know, I was working at 30 Rock for years and then I'm working at Warner Brothers. I'm always there at someone else's behest. Now, finally, Willy Wonka, I'm being Willy Wonka, I have my own chocolate factory. This is, I'm Pee-wee and this is my playhouse. And so I do feel like I'm allowed to act like an insane emperor and say things like, what? What are you speaking? No more of that.
Are you
only English?
Are you upset that you can't understand it and that you wish you could speak another language and be cool like me? Like, does, I feel like you're just a little jealous.
I don't think I'm jealous.
You're jealous.
I don't think so.
I think you're jealous. I think you're jealous because I can speak another language and I like switch on and off.
It's really shocking. I remember the first time almost 11, 12 years ago when I heard you talking to your mom outside my door. I had no idea that you spoke this foreign tongue. but listen, let's do a thing where I speak to you in English and you answer me in Armenian, okay?
Okay.
I want people to understand.
Okay.
How are you today, Sona?
Tun shat kesh martmenes, yeval as korze, I live as chem sider.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wish to sort of sabotage the United States of America. Will you help me in my evil scheme?
Yeah, mortet shat germage. Yes, asank germag mortme hich chem desads.
Yes, bad USA.
Yeah.
Yes, we must bring down the bad United States.
Yeah.
We must work within the United States to bring it down as secret spies. Don't you agree, Sona? Don't you agree? Stop laughing, spy. We're here to destroy America from within.
No, no, no. Shat abush paner gesesqor. Yes, American shat kasirem.
Yes, yes. I agree.
Yeah.
What's attack when they're least expected?
Yeah.
Yes, in the night. In the night.
What is the plan here?
I don't know. It you're just sounds.
Saying the
I love that, you're. I love that you're probably saying things like, they like boiled pork.
No,
and also,
I'm saying really mean things about you specifically.
Are you really?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you saying?
I'm saying I hate working here. Your skin is super white. I've never seen someone's skin so white before.
Oh, okay.
And
all right.
Yeah, then you just kept talking about taking down America.
I don't know.
I don't understand what the plan was.
We're going to attack in the night when they expect at least.
We're going to attack who? Who are we attacking?
I'm not sure. I didn't have my plan all worked out, but when you answer...
And you're speaking in English, so people know what
you're
saying.
What is the language that Armenian is closest to? Is it close to Russian?
No, it's not.
What is it? What is it? What is it close to?
Well, you know, Tak speaks Russian because he grew up in the Soviet Union.
Right.
And, you know, there's Armenians from Lebanon who speak Arabic, and there's Armenians from Iran who speak Arabic, and my parents are from Istanbul, so they speak Turkish, too.
This is cool. I love how multicultural you are, and I love that you're bringing this perspective to the podcast, and all I have to say to you is, in my building, English only! Only English!
Why are you saying it with an accent?
I don't know. I say English only! I still believe that if you speak English with an accent, other people can understand you who don't speak English. I say English only!
Why? That doesn't make any sense.
My building, English only! I have no idea what I'm this
well,
is insane.
Because I know that it upsets you to speak a different language, I'm only ever going to speak in Armenian from now on.
Okay, so let's wrap up this segment. You in your tongue and me in mine. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, gosh and bigora. Thank you, Sona. Thanks for stopping by the podcast. It was nice having you here today. And how are you, Sona? Are you anything to say to the fans before we slip over the rainbow and say goodnight?
Yeah, duner talguzem.
Ah, see, people from different cultures can get along.
Yeah, tun abush martmenes.
Have a potato.
Yeah, okay, patates chamuzer paitshat, merci. Duner talguzem.
Oh, no, I like America. No, I won't attack it.
doing? What is this bit?
I don't know.
I don't understand what the bit is.
I like trying to make it sound like you're up to something bad.
Why?
Because it's just as amusing.
But you're saying the English part and you're saying the whole plan in English. And so I don't understand what the thing is. What's the bit? That you were like planning a thing, but your part is in English and you're saying what the plan is in English? What's happening?
I love what's the bit. What's the bit here? What's the bit? Won't you trust me? I'm the bit captain. I've been in the bit business for a long time. Just trust me.
No, this bit doesn't make sense. Don't say bit captain in the bit business.
All right, we're out.
This is stupid.
We're out.
This was a waste.
Good night
to
all of you. It was a wasted segment. Say good night, Sona, in your own special tongue.
Kisher party.
Barev, inch pasek, love him.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Becton. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.